This is the University of Georgia Griffin News, brought to you over WKU AM 1450, 102.3 FM, The Rock 88.9 FM, and stream live on WKUradio.com. This program is to update our listeners on the many and exciting things at the University of Georgia Griffin, with Dr. Lou Honeycutt and his guests. The program is made possible by Frank and Carolyn Harris of Round Oak Resources Tree Farms and Murray & Company Realtors. And now today's program with Dr. Lou Honeycutt.
Well, good morning, Griffin, Spalding County, and the surrounding area. We're glad to be back with y'all today on the Griffin Campus News. As always, we thank our sponsors for allowing us to do this show every week, as well as WKEU for sponsoring the show every week and allowing us to do it. But I'm here. We got another great show this week. I'm going to call them the unsung heroes of the campus today, the two people I have with me today, because it is George Grenade, who is our research station superintendent and field research services leader at UGA, and we're going to explain what that is in a minute. Then we got Dale Hess, superintendent of plant operations and engineering. Again, we'll explain all that in a minute, too. So, again, I call them the unsung heroes, and you'll know why after we get through with this visit today. But welcome, gentlemen, to the show today.
Thank you.
And so what we got to do, you got to tell your life story, as we always do here. So from birth till this chair today, we'll start with Dale. How did you get to this position, to this place at this radio station today?
I grew up in the eastern part of Kansas, went to Kansas State University, then moved out to Colorado Springs and worked there for about 15 years. And the company I was working with at in Colorado Springs had the operation and maintenance contract for the dew line sites, the radar sites that were along the Arctic Circle.
Oh, that's cool.
And the general decided that we should be in Langley Air Force Base, so he moved us clear to Virginia. And I did that for another 7 years, and about that time, the dew line became more of an obsolete thing, and as there was other ways to provide the protection that they were doing, so they closed down the sites, and I lost my job there. And then I found this job here at that point. So I've been here at University in Griffin for 24 years now. So.
Okay. Which is incredible. So you're a CIA guy, too. There's probably some kind of clearance we don't know about that.
I gave that one up.
Oh, okay. So ex-spy, something like that. That's cool. That's more than I knew about you. But okay, George, same thing. From birth till now, how'd you get here?
I grew up on the eastern side of the state of Georgia, a little town called Waynesboro, which is south of the big city of Augusta, where the Augusta National is, and the Masters is held every spring. Then I went to ABAC and got a 2-year degree there, and then transferred to UGA, where I got my BS and MS in agronomy with a soils emphasis. Left there and went to Auburn University and worked on our experiment station there.
Well, we're not supposed to mention Auburn on that, but that's all right.
So we were there 2 years, and then we went to the main campus for another 4 years at Auburn, and then we left there and went to Dale State and worked for Kansas State University down in the southeast corner, a little town called Parsons. Was there for about 6 years, and then I found this job. And my wife, who I met at ABAC, and she's from Cairo, we decided that we wanted to come back to Georgia, so we were fortunate enough to get an interview and then get offered the position about 29 years ago. So we've been with the Georgia Station. Oh, well, not the Georgia Station, the University of Georgia Griffin campus now for 29 years, be 29 in April.
That's awesome.
So we've been heading up field research services there. And we've enjoyed it. It's been a good continue track. It's been fun.
Absolutely. I agree. So you guys have had lived many different places and moved around. And I mean, that's kind of what I like people to hear about the people that work at the campus is it's a big, diverse group of people, internationally, international flair and all kinds of stuff, and certainly around the country. But okay, so let's talk really quick, just so we kind of define things for people. Dale, talk about, just in general terms, plant operations and engineering. What is plant operate? What is your major focus on campus?
Well, my major focus is keeping the buildings operating, and That is keeping the heat on, or
which has really been important the last few days.
Or when it comes summertime, they like their air conditioning. So that's a big part of it. The other operation aspect of it is keeping like the buildings clean, floors swept and polished, and removing the trash. There is so many different functions in a building, such as your boilers and keeping the water running in them, keeping the pipes from freezing. It's just the whole gambit of you could take your house and you just all the things you do in your house, for changing the filters to keeping this running, paying the utility bills and everything else. I do that, but it's magnified 100 and some times. So.
Sure. I think that's an incredible point. That's why, and when George, you explain yours, they'll see why too. That's why I say unsung heroes, the both divisions are, because most of the time these are the things people that just work on campus don't realize someone else had to get up early to put salt on the sidewalks if there's ice, or somebody else had to get up early if there's electricity out, or we just all walk in and of course y'all hear from me if my heat isn't on or if the lights don't work or
something. Yeah, it don't take long for people to give you a call.
Exactly. It doesn't take long at all. So in a nutshell, that's it. George, let's look at Field Research Services and talk about that in a nutshell, and then we'll delve more deep into both of them.
Field Services, we're responsible for everything outside, all the lands.
Okay.
And the Griffin campus has a little over 1,100 acres, yeah. as you are aware of. We got the 120 acres right there on the main campus, and then we have two farms here in Spalding County and then one down in Pike County that make up that 1,100 acres. So what we're responsible for is the grounds on the campus to begin with. We make sure it looks good. If it doesn't look good, you can come see me and I hear about it. If the grass needs cutting, or we sprayed some weeds we shouldn't have sprayed. And then the other thing we do on the farms is we work with the researchers. If they need land for a plot to do a study on, we work with them to find that spot. I've got a small crew, as you well know, that will prepare the land for them and assist them in getting their studies in. So we have timber out there that we manage, and so we make sure when it's ready to harvest, we get with you and talk about, yeah, we need to cut some timber, and we sell the timber. So anything outside, we're responsible for. We have to make sure it's in order and working.
Sure. And again, it's kind of one of those things of, it's not the things that people see all the time. Like people just notice how nice the campus looks. Right. They don't realize someone had to get out there and make it look that way. So again, it's kind of the unsung part of what y'all, exactly, what we do or what the campus does. But okay, so y'all have been here quite a while, which is great. But so what are some of the changes that y'all have seen in the 24 to 29 years that y'all have been here? Number one, you saw a change 3.5 years ago, because we started talking campus rather than station, which we all joke about now.
Right.
But and the crazy Texan showed up. But before that, even what's some of the things y'all have seen happen? I know the campus has changed over that time period.
When I came here, the Flint building was boarded up and not even.
I've seen the pictures.
Your office wasn't. So we completely renovated that building from the basement on up to the top of the roof. And that was one of the earlier projects. Also about that time, they got the expansion to the Center for Food Safety.
Okay.
And so that was a big project that we did there. And about that time, the Olympics were going on.
Sure.
And so they had the pavilion that they had up at the Olympic Park. Yeah, and we were fortunate enough to raise some money to be able to take that building down. We took all the boards down and numbered every one of them, and so we could put them back up where they were supposed to be, and brought them down here, and then got fortunate enough to get funding to erect it, and so that was a big addition to the
And it's camp. An incredible addition to campus. The Woodruff Pavilion is just incredible.
And then about a little over 10 years ago, we got the county support for the Student Learning Center, and that was a tremendous addition that we did at that time. And things kept going after that. We ended up with a Food Product and Innovation Center and the turf grass followed right after that. And so the campus has changed tremendously in addition of buildings and things like that. But to get all that, you still got to maintain the infrastructure
exactly.
of the campus. And that's the difficult thing to find the funding's really for. It's kind of the last thing that anybody pays a lot of attention to. But in we were able to get things started to where we wanted to replace our power lines. Our power lines are well over 50 years old. The poles are in really bad shape. The squirrels love to run around, and they every once in a while they find some wires, and
exactly.
they blow the transformers and things like that. And so we wanted to get that under the ground. So we put in a what we call a duct bank system. It's basically where you put pipe in the ground, and then we encased all that pipe so that you couldn't dig through it. And we have it set up to where we're starting to put all of our electricity, and we did our fiber optic at the same time, so we can take the communications are done in one duct bank, the electrical's done in another duct bank, and we began to start filling that, I call it, putting the wires
sure.
and things that are needed for that. It was the other thing it gave us was the opportunity to be able to obtain our power for the campus from two different locations. Our primary power used to always come in off of Experiment Street, and we now have it so that we can pull our power in from the Ellis Road area. That is serving several of our buildings now, but it doesn't serve the whole campus.
Sure.
And we hope to be able to get it someday done where we put all the wires and transformers and things like that in so that if for some reason or other there was no power available on the Ellis side, we could switch over to the Experiment side and give us a whole lot more reliability. And these researchers, they really like to keep their stuff up and running, I can tell
you. You know, it's so critical. That's one of the, again, the unsung part of this is there's we have, you know, minus temperature freezers. We have there's so many components of research on campus that an hour without electricity is an hour they can't afford to be without electricity. So it that I know that's a great goal, and I hope we get there. It just takes money, right, to get there. But you know, that's all. Everything just takes money, right? But because you're right, we can't. And we've had several occasions where we've been out of power for quite a while. Just one of them was during construction of the turf building. One of the contractors hit a pole. But you know, all those things happen, and you're out for 2 or 3 hours. Then y'all are scrambling again. The unsung part to get extension cords run halfway across the world to get power back to these researchers, and I applaud y'all for doing that, but it's pretty critical. Electricity, you know, it's hard. You don't realize how much you need it till you don't have it. And then we're such a – my home here is first all-electric house I've ever lived in. I've always had gas. And the first time we lost electricity and I couldn't run anything, that told me real quick, I don't really need an all-electric house. But that's pretty much where we're at on campus too. So, okay, so, George, from your standpoint, I know what in your tenure here, what kind of changes have you seen?
Well, we've sold some of the farmlands that we had. That reduced the number of acreages down. But then we also, on the main campus there, all our turf plots at one time back before 2000 and before were zoned city water.
Okay.
And so when we went through that drought in 2000, we looked at that, yeah, we needed to help the city out. So we did cut back on watering a lot of our plots. Well, research plots that were under grants, we definitely kept watering those. But we rationed it out, but we also started looking at other ways to irrigate that we wouldn't have to depend on the city, and so we did. We there's three lakes or ponds on the campus, and so they're all now interconnected, and all those plots that you see on those turf grass right there next to Experiment Street are water irrigated from that, from the ponds, mainly from two ponds, but the third pond is used to fill one of them back up. We sunk a well that gives us a 200 gallons per minute to keep the ponds full. We also uses it to help Dale with some of his cooling towers
sure.
and also some of the greenhouses as well. And so that that was a big change there when we did that, and it has really worked out real well for us. I think we've had a big savings.
Oh, sure.
Dale can address that a lot better than I can.
And then this year we haven't had to run the pump much, have we?
No, not this year.
We've just had an incredible rain year so far.
So far it's been pretty wet. The other thing is on the farms, we used to have a bunch of old tractors, International Harvesters and Fords and what have you. We've updated those. We got some John Deere's and some other tractors. And these tractors are now have GSP guidance systems on them, whereas used to, we had to make sure our guy knew how to drive a straight line and keep that up. And now he can lay down that first straight line, and what we call AB line, and then we just come back with the GPS system, and it lays the it does the tilling and keeps everything straight and the planting straight for the researchers.
And that, I think that's a really critical point for people. In a typical farming operation, it might not be as critical, but for you, that everything's plot-driven and everything's precise and measured, and
exactly.
Because it's on a research project. So it makes it even more important to be precise.
Yep. And we've begun to use some UAVs as well to take pictures of the plots and look at things that they can look at different photos of the plot to tell different how treatments are working with each other. So it's changed quite a bit. You're not an old dumb farmer anymore. I tell you what, you've got to really be on the cutting edge of what's going on. It's
sure.
It's electronically driven. So
sure.
No, and then we do a lot of things by emails, too.
I mean, email may have ruined the world. I don't know.
Exactly.
It makes
sense. I'm sure the U.S. Postal System is not real pleased with it.
I'm sure.
But we do. I mean, I stay in contact with the other branch stations or RECs in the system, as well as communicate with some other states as well about some things.
Sure. And think about, for both of y'all, that when y'all started, and certainly when I started working my professional career after college, cell phones were non-existent.
Right.
Computers were non-existent. We had one computer in the whole department when I graduated with my PhD, and it was the dean's, and no one got to touch it. We all went in and watched people use it. But, I mean, think of the changes and there was certainly no technology, per se, for farming or for utility, anything that we think of now. Now we take it all for granted. We can.
Right.
I know you've shown me the security cameras on your phone a million times.
Right.
You can be sitting here and watching Pike County and seeing what's going on there.
Exactly.
So it's been pretty incredible, but it certainly makes us very dependent upon something that may be out of our control to some extent.
And then the another thing we did, my crew used to meet on the main camp, meet there in the gin shop, and we've transformed one of our storage buildings out on the farm into a shop and a headquarters building for us, which made it more efficient for us to get to work instead of coming on campus and then going back out to the farms. Now they're
sure
we meet at the farms and get started. So.
Sure, because part of your team doesn't work on main campus;
exactly.
They work off campus on the farm.
On
so
the
yeah,
farms,
right. It makes sense not to have to come back.
So that helped a lot.
So yeah, lots of changes.
And I've watched peach trees. When I first came, there were peach trees out there on Ellis Road. We pushed them up, got rid of them, said we weren't going to do peaches anymore, and now Dario Chavez has come on board, 3 years ago,
sure.
4 years ago, and we're peach trees
are back you, they
on,
have
on
grown
experiment streets.
So incredibly well. I mean,
off
they were
16,
tiny
yeah.
put in, and
yeah.
I get lots of comments of people saying, are those peach trees back on? Because, you know, it's so so visible from
from 16. Yeah.
So, I mean, I get lots of comments saying, are those really peaches back at the experiment station? I'm like, absolutely, they are, which is great. But they have grown. I know there's a lot of underground. I know that's part of his project is to grow them that way. But they've grown incredibly fast,
which
is pretty awesome to look out there. And so from the farming standpoint, too, you know, I always tell people that while we may not be number one in peaches this year, it rotates back and forth all around with South Carolina, but we are number one in blueberries,
right?
And so, part of one of the farms,
the Westbrook Farm on Ellis Road, we've got I think it's around 8 acres of blueberries out there, if I remember right. that we work with Scott Neesmith on.
And, absolutely. And really, he, you know, I credit him with why Georgia is the blueberry state. So, and right here in Griffin, which falls right under your – falls under both of y'all, because utilities and everything else to go – even on the farms fall under Dale. So there's no
–
it's a combined working thing.
And we've been able to provide him with a new facility out there at the
absolutely.
Research area that will greatly assist him in his work. So
sure.
We get involved both with us.
Absolutely. There's no real distinction. The lines are really blurry, which is they have to be. But and so let's talk, Dale, about that for a little bit. People have been asking me, why are you tearing down things on campus? It looks like there's brand new buildings being torn down. Well, no, they're not brand new, but they've been well maintained, so they look brand new. But talk a little bit about we're under a mandate to tear down some things. And let's talk about that for a minute, just so people listening will know why they see some destruction going on as well as construction.
It has to do the legislature was looking at it from the standpoint, do we want to keep funding the O&M of buildings that were old and not efficient and things like that?
Sure.
And so they asked us to identify those buildings, and we did identify it, and they then come up with a proposal whereas if you will remove those buildings, then we will provide you operation and maintenance funds for other buildings.
Right.
And so it was kind of a deal that was made with the legislature that we remove several buildings, and we are in the process of taking down, I think, what is it, 6 this year?
I think so, yeah. I think the total was 29 to begin with. And what people don't understand is there's been demolition all along, but it was on the farms. Now they see it because it's on main campus, and that's concerning to some.
Well, there was also demolition that was done to erect the turf grass
absolutely.
Building. Absolutely. And so I think we took down 3 buildings in order to do that building. That was part of the agreement, too,
sure.
was to take those buildings down. So there's some other buildings that we've done on the campus. There were small. You didn't see them.
Sure.
So it didn't look like we were doing much on campus. Now we're
– Now they all show.
Now it's showing up, and they are coming down as we speak. So
they are. And the one's right off main parking lot. It's one I get asked about all the time. What happened to that green? What did something blow up? Did something – no, it's being torn down. But, well, why? It looks brand new. Well, it's because it's on the demo list. But the good news is when the list is complete in 2 years, we've got a 3-year plan to finish. It really changes the look of the campus, but it opens up some areas. And it also gives us what I like to call building sites for potential mm-hmm. new buildings that may come in the future. And we'll have those sites prepared and ready to say, yes, we would like that. We would like the Dale Hess, because you got to give me millions of dollars to make this happen, the Dale Hess Science Building to go right here or whatever it is. So it helps us out in the long run, but it does.
Yeah, and it's going to – in the long run, I'm sure the campus is going to improve substantially out of this.
Sure.
It's difficult for us because a lot of those buildings provided storage, and now we're having to find other storage areas.
Absolutely.
And it's tightening our belts an awful lot.
Sure.
Our operations is quite a bit involved in reducing the number of storage things that we have. As you build these buildings, they give you attic stock, which is a lot of different things, you know, to keep the building going
sure.
and things. Well, the storage building provided the area to keep that. So now we're having to try and find other locations for that. And that's difficult. And some of it we're just going to have to go ahead and get rid of because
sure.
we don't have the space to keep it any longer.
Right. And I'm guilty of this. Tank. We're all guilty of keeping some things we don't need, but we have a certain amount of things we have to keep. And so the good news to me, though, or the good thing it helps us do as we tear these down and really get to a level of what do we really need to get to bring back, we can hopefully, in one of these new building sites, get a building built that we can have adequate storage. And for example, one of the buildings coming down in 2 years is the where you house some of your people. So, I mean, we've got to – but it helps us to address – it's hard to address the – it's kind of like chicken or egg. It's hard to address that we need this when we have it. But when we know it's going away, it's easier to address that we need something else. So, because and it's one that people will see come down. It's a little bit of a historic building. It's the gin shop that I think 1938, if memory serves me. But again, it's one that before anybody calls me and says, "Why are you tearing that?" We don't have a choice. The list was made. The list was prepared, and we're just kind of fulfilling that. But we'll go back with something. And again, it's going to open up parts of campus that the views will be different, but very much we have an incredible, and I credit both of y'all with this, we have an incredible campus, and I get compliments constantly. The chief of police from UPD, chief of police, university police, was here yesterday and just went on and on about the way the campus looks, and we get that all the time. Well, that's, you know, this is just going to help that as well. So, and again, some of the buildings, as everyone knows, looked brand new. They weren't, but they look brand new and were being used up until the day we start tearing them down. But that's just the way it goes. And we are constructing new things too, though. As you said, we have Food Pick, we have Turf Building, we have the Dundee Cafe, which in the very, very short term will be a cafe. We'll have food in it. It's already a cafe, but it will have food in it in the very short term. So a lot of great things happening on that too. Okay, I want to talk. We're going to go to our bottom of the hour break here in a little bit, but I want to talk. Start the conversation about y'all have some really great people that work for y'all, and I know this is again where the unsung part comes in. People don't understand what y'all's teams have to do to keep things going, to keep us not knowing if things are working perfectly. We should never know your people are there. I mean, and we don't, that things do work perfectly, but let's talk a little bit about y'all's teams. And George, we'll start with you because you have grounds team and farm teams and all kinds of things, but let's talk a little bit about your people.
Well, I have a crew of 10.
Okay.
There's three up. We got one vacancy on grounds right now, but there's three on groundsmen, and we've got some part-time folks that work with us too. And Ryan heads up that team, and Ryan Hodson and Darren Bice are on that team, and they do a fantastic job of keeping the grass mowed. And it's more than just keeping the grass mowed. Ryan does a great job of developing what kind of landscape to go around the building, like the new Food Pick building when it came in.
Absolutely.
He designed the landscape around that building and did an excellent job of getting good plants and what needed to go there to make it stand out even more. And then Darren works with him in keeping that all maintained. The Bulldog, as you know, they keep up with that. The rocks, the rock chips that are around that, keep that in and what have you. And then around the SLC building, the Student Learning Center, they're maintaining that and what have you. So that's that crew there. And then Daniel Nordstrom and Jason Hogan work on the turf plots area there on main campus and work with the turf team on maintaining those plots and making sure they're maintained and keep upright. And then we go over to the garden. Ben Fields is there. I almost said Ben Hogan, and I don't know why I think of the golfer.
But it's golf time.
But anyway, Ben Fields heads that up, and he is doing a fantastic job. He's had shoes to follow with Tony Johnson.
Oh, absolutely.
Santa Claus is leaving. But he has done an excellent job of filling those shoes, and Jason works with him. Jason is split right now halftime with the turf and then halftime over in the garden. So Ben works closely with Dr. Wayne Gardner, the coordinator of the garden.
Absolutely.
And they've really got that looking good and this research as well as demonstration plots out there. And then as we move over to the Dempsey Farm and Westbrook Farms, there's Robbie Beck and Brian Nichols. They do an excellent job of working with Scott Neesmith, as we mentioned, and Dariel Chavez and others, James Buck and John Yeomans, on getting their plots ready and doing things out there and just maintaining and making sure it looks nice the whole time. And then as we go down to the Bledsoe Farm down in Pike County, we've got Henry Jackson and Tyler Brannon who maintain and work in plots. They work with Dr. Dave Bunton, the variety testing, Daniel. I've lost the head of the
variety testing.
Anyway, sorry about that. But he works with Henry Jordan and Gary Ware as well, and getting their plots out there. And then there's in the wintertime right now. We're working with Muhammad Magoo, and Jerry Johnson with their wheat.
Sure.
And so they do a great job of maintaining that farm. And like you said, they make me look good. I'll be honest with you. I don't hear any complaints out of the researchers. When I hear a complaint, I know I've got a problem out there. But,
sure.
But they all those guys do a fantastic job. And then we got Michael Moore and John Moore. They're part-time workers. John's working in the garden with Ben and Jason, and Michael's working on the grounds there with Ryan and Daniel. I mean, with anyway, working with on
sure.
the ground. So
sure.
So
well,
it's great. I
and,
mean, it's
and they're the guys that all the guys you're talking about are the guys yeah. that not everybody sees all the time.
Exactly.
But they're the reason why we all. And again, y'all make me look good. And I mean that because I'm the one that gets the compliments. I immediately spread them back out to y'all. But that when people just don't realize what it takes to keep this kind of thing going.
Exactly.
And so we're going to take our bottom of the hour break. We're going to come back. Dale, talk to you specifically about your teams and then continue talking more about how things work at the Griffin campus.
You're listening to the University of Georgia Griffin Campus News on AM 1450 WKEU in Griffin, Georgia. Also heard on 102.3 FM and on 88.9 FM, The Rock, Georgia Public Radio at its finest. We're also streaming on the website, WKEUradio.com. And you can take us with you wherever you go, courtesy of the free WKEU app for all smartphone and tablet devices. This morning's program will continue after this.
Frank and Carolyn Harris of Round Oak Resources Tree Farm and Murray & Company Realty. Proud supporters of the University of Georgia Griffin Campus and proud to bring you this week's edition of the University of Georgia Griffin Campus News. As the UGA Griffin Campus grows with the great educational opportunities for our children, Round Oak Resources Tree Farm is growing our future with trees to support and assist our environment. Frank and Carolyn Harris of Round Oak Resources Tree Farm and Murray & Company Realtors are proud supporters of the UGA Griffin Campus and area youth activities in Griffin and Spalding County.
Time to resume this morning's University of Georgia Griffin Campus News. Let us rejoin the host of this morning's program. He is the Assistant Provost and Campus Director on the UGA Griffin Campus, Dr. Lou Honeycutt.
Thank you, Tony. Welcome back, everybody. We are having a great conversation today about how the campus works. And that's a big job to make the campus work because we're literally, this campus is larger than the town that I grew up outside of in Texas. I mean, there's the infrastructure it's an incredible amount of infrastructure. So, Dale, I'm talking today with Dale Hess, Superintendent, Plant Operations and Engineering, and then George Grenade, who's our Research Station Superintendent and then runs our Field Research Service group. So, Dale, we talked to George right before the break about kind of your team and how they work. Dale, let's talk about yours and the kind of the diversity that you run and who's working with you.
Okay. First section I'll talk about is the guys that take care of the buildings that do the maintenance on them, the repair and stuff like that. I have five people in that group. It consists of a carpenter, an electrician, a plumber, and I have three HVAC mechanics, but they're jack-of-all-trade
exactly.
type people. The HVAC people carry their license. They're fully qualified. The plumber is a master plumber with a license, and the electrician is also highly qualified, carrying his license. So they're very qualified people that do a tremendous amount of work. You really don't have to provide a lot of close supervision. You only need to direct them to where the problem is, and they'll go about solving that problem.
Sure. And the great thing about that, like when you say three HVAC people, which they are all jack-of-all-trades, which I love that, but we've got a large and I agree, HVAC's important. I'm the first to complain. Typical on the air, the cold doesn't bother me as bad as the heat. But we've got, what, about 500,000 square foot of space on campus? Or
just a little under a 500,000 square
feet. That's a lot. That's a lot. And not all of it's conditioned, I know, but a whole lot of it is. And it's pretty big much. Conditioned spaces.
Yeah, there's an awful lot of it.
So it takes, and I'm telling you, again, with me, and we've got about 325 people that work there, probably about 325 complaints when the air is not working. So I mean, that's pretty critical. So that's one part of your team.
Yeah. The second part of my team are the janitors or the custodians and things like that. They have well over 200,000 square feet of actual cleaning space that they work on a daily basis. And then it also requires them to come in and clean a lot of floors, different types of floors.
Sure.
You're talking quarry tile floors. You're talking, well, we even have concrete floors.
Sure, sure.
They got to do all that work, plus they haul out the trash from everybody that they gather every day. And so that's a big group that does an awful great job that, as you say, they are the unsung heroes that keep the campus kind of...
Absolutely, and it's really not a very big group. I mean, how many custodians do we have on?
Right now, I think I have... five on. I'm looking to fill a couple of positions. So
200,000 square feet and five people. So it's not a big group, and they do a tremendous amount of work. And again, they are truly unsung, because unless you come to work real early, you probably don't even see them, because they're here early and getting all their stuff done really quickly and then throughout the day. But that's I always say that the top's not nearly as important as the bottom, and I mean that sincerely, because not that they're at the bottom by any means, but that support staff that sometimes get overlooked. Mm-hmm. Y'all can run the campus every day, all day without me there. The one day a custodian's gone, I panic. I know you do too. So that says it all, I think, where the true importance lies. But, okay, so that's that group.
We have one security guard that works during the daylight hours when we're all there, kind of patrolling the campus, making sure things are safe for us during the day. During the evenings, weekends, and stuff like that, we contract our security for those periods of time. And the other two people that are on my staff are just invaluable. So they really hold us all together when you come
right
to it. David Jongenbrier is a architect by education, but he is everything. He oversees the maintenance group first to help, keep them directed on what work they're doing. But he is very knowledgeable about building construction. He's very knowledgeable what it takes to repair the buildings to keep the heat, the boilers running and the HVAC systems working. A great person. The other person I have is Anthony Flint, and he does everything. Okay,
I'm telling you, talk about someone who can do everything. I agree.
He does the mail delivery, which people often forget,
exactly.
And they really like their mail. So that's very important. But surplus property, and that's somewhat of a misnomer, surplus, because what we end up with is junk property, but
sure.
Things that they're trying to get rid of. But this all has to be disposed of in accordance with state guidelines, and that it becomes a paperwork trail that's unbelievable.
Oh,
but it, for a lot of it to end up on eBay to be sold that way, so
sure,
that's another big aspect. He also takes care of making sure our pest control services are being done. He orders all of the janitorial supplies, and that's a lot too when you get down to how many different stuff that's done that.
Well, and then he does vehicle maintenance or at least keeps track of all the, and we have a lot of vehicles.
Yeah, and that's another big area that he does. So he's just an invaluable person. And so that's pretty much my
sure.
group. But like I say, they are exceptional in every one of them and what they do.
So. They are. I mean, they, and I think, and George, I can say mm-hmm. the same thing for yours. We are good. So fortunate to have the people in place that we do. And no one's on the Griffin campus to be a millionaire. I mean, there's unfortunately, you know, I wish we could pay everybody four times what we pay them. We can't. No one, they're there because they enjoy being there. And, you know, and it is a good job. We have good jobs, but it's just we're very fortunate. And getting back to David, who, of course, we all say tall David because he's like 9 foot tall. But anyway, he is truly, and we could point out anybody. I'm just going to pick on him for a minute. He can truly do anything. I mean, and what's great about him to me, he helps me a lot because I'll say, we need to knock that wall down. And he thinks already about, well, where's the HVAC controls? So he brings me back to earth a lot saying, well, we can do that, but it's going to take X, Y, and Z. He's just got a good eye, a good vision for the campus. And I mean, certainly represents you very well in, mm-hmm. on anything. And he's just kind of a gentle giant kind of guy. He's got this sense of humor that just cracks me up, but it's just very low key. And
very, very low key is right. Yeah.
So again, and I wish he could have been here with us today. I know he ran into couldn't get here, but that's right. We'll get him back on some other time and kid him about some things. But okay, so we've talked about your teams. We've talked about kind of what's changed in the past up till now. Let's talk about the future. So y'all going to have to look in your crystal balls now. So first off, you know, you can't retire till after, 50 years? Isn't that the rule in the University of Georgia? But anyway, so we're not talking about retirement. But let's talk about what do y'all see changes coming in the future? Just look at the future, what you see in FRS and facilities and what's going to happen on campus. I mean, obviously, I have my ideas, but what are y'all's ideas? Let's just talk about that.
Well, a lot of our things that we're going to be seeing in the future are going to be dictated by the research that's going on and what's sure. coming up. But we do have aging facilities, and eventually they're going to have to be replaced. I see that, you know, the physical plant building itself is a makeshift
sure.
from a long time ago. It does not really have what I'd call a real solid home. I would hope down the road that somewhere along the line we can get something built that will really fulfill the needs of the facilities group and the grounds group,
right.
they
sure.
should
yes.
be included yes. in it too. So that's one of the visions I kind of have.
Sure.
I really see, you know, completing our duct bank system something. It's just old.
Frank and Carolyn
it's
Harris
gonna fall down one of these days, and we're going to be up the creek trying to
I had at least one person say, "Oh, that's just a luxury. I want to bury all your lands." I'm like, "No, it's not, man. We've had more hurricanes. Maybe I brought them with me. I don't know, but every time we have a storm, we have issues because we have old overhead lines. And one of the advantages of putting them underground is they're not overhead anymore.
Yeah, so the tree limbs and everything else.
Squirrels.
Yeah. We've even had hawks that
sure.
have,
so I mean, there's a lot of
them,
good
so.
Reasons to do.
You know, it's just unbelievable the number of critters that'll cause you problems. So, that's one of the things I envision. I guess I would like to see
sure
finished up. I think greenhouses. The more I see these researchers and what they're doing, the more I see the need for more greenhouses.
Sure.
So I think we will see some more greenhouses erected in the future. So.
And when people drive through, or certainly if they look on paper, it looks like we have more greenhouses than 52,000 people would need. But what anyone that we show them to, some are very old, some are being torn down, some are in need of complete overhaul. And then some are so small that on a piece of paper they're the same numbered building as a big one, but they so it's not it's it's a square footage component. You're right. I think there's going to be a need for plus the technology in greenhouses. Even though you just think about it being a glass house, that technology has changed tremendously. And because some of ours are would they be 50s 50-ish
yeah.
built or 50s?
Yeah, and you know, fortunately, right now we're getting some greenhouses added to the
sure.
to the campus. We've got about $750,000 project to add some greenhouses. And it's amazing to me how long it takes to get these done because greenhouses are not on the shelf. You have
exactly.
you have to wait for these things to be constructed. You design them, and then you go out to talk to the vendors, and they're not on the shelf. They have to have them built.
So sure.
to bring to you to erect. So
sure. So yeah, I agree with that. I mean, everything takes a little longer than most. If you've ever built your own home, you know it takes a lot longer than you really think it should and think it does. But so, George, from your standpoint, what do you kind of see looking in your crystal ball towards the future?
Well, I think I'll pick up on what Dale said about the grounds. They've been shifted around a lot over my time frame.
Sure.
In fact, the office building that Dale and I in used to be the grounds. Grounds used to be in it.
Okay.
It was a lawnmower shed at one time. I don't know if Dale. I think it got converted before Dale came on board. But so they've moved around, and I see they need a central facility similar to what the turf team has out there of their building.
Sure.
That they can store their equipment and work in and work out of. It could be part of that facilities building that Dale's talking about. On the farms, I think we're going to go more and more to the GPS. Research type stuff where it's not just controlling the tractors, but it'll control the planter, the trip the planter at the right spots and what have you. Irrigation is going to be important still. Even though as wet as we are right
sure.
now,
that doesn't last forever.
I'll talk with the researchers. We're all concerned about what's going to be here come July and August. Are we going to be in a drought?
Absolutely.
And maybe we will, maybe we won't. I don't know. My crystal ball doesn't tell that. But I see that as something becoming more and more important to us and to the way of life for research.
Sure, I agree.
Probably more use of the UAVs or drones in the research program than what we're currently using them for. It's just a wide open field. I think
sure.
what's going to happen. Whoever dreamed 20 years ago would be self-driven tractors.
You know? Exactly. Or even looking at video on your phone
video,
from 20 miles away. I mean,
things
have changed so quickly, and they do now. So, I mean, as soon as you buy something, it's out of date,
right.
Pretty much, or needs to be updated. Yeah. But well, and then. And so I agree with that completely. And even some of the drone technology now that I was at the golf manager's deal that Clint Waltz had on campus two
right.
weeks ago, and Brian Schwartz, one of his grad students, now they're with their drone and they use infrared, they can do whatever they want. They can actually look at disease plots and disease areas and via the drone. So, I mean,
right.
we're almost taking the human factor,
right.
which, you know, that's how Skynet took over in Terminator. So I stay a little nervous about that.
Exactly.
But we're really turning more and more of the control of agriculture sure. over to technology. And that's great. It makes it way more accurate and better, but it's a little scary when the drone starts to attack us. I don't know, because it becomes
yep.
self-aware or whatever. But a lot of changes, a lot of visioning. The good news is the Griffin campus is always going to be here. I mean, we've been here since we opened the gates in 1889. There isn't,
right.
at least I don't foresee a time when it is going
to
go away.
I think it may shift it like it has more from the row crop type agriculture to the ornamental landscape
sure.
type stuff. But, yeah, I think it's going to be here. I can't see it going anywhere.
Well, in our position, I always say, and I will say this till the day they get rid of me, we have the perfect position of a campus because you look north from our
right.
campus, you're in metro Atlanta. You look south on our campus, you're in rural Georgia. We're in the perfect place to do everything we do. And so I think you're right. I mean, ornamentals are huge on our campus already, but we've seen even ornamental blueberries that
yep.
Scott's doing. I mean, so that have grown. And that brings me back to the garden. I mean, we have an incredible – a lot of people have never – associated with the gardens part of the campus. Because it's split by the expressway. But
exactly.
It's an incredible demonstration and research area for urban ag, rural ag, whatever it might be. So a lot of good components there. Tony, do we want to take our top of our next break before we'll come back and do some finish-up things?
That will be fine with me, sir. So we'll take this break, and coming up next, we'll give you a list of the announcements upcoming on the University of Georgia Griffin campus. This morning's program continues after this.
Frank and Carolyn Harris of Round Oak Resources Tree Farm and Murray & Company Realty. Proud supporters of the University of Georgia Griffin campus and proud to bring you this week's edition of the University of Georgia Griffin campus news. As the UGA Griffin campus grows with the great educational opportunities for our children, Round Oak Resources Tree Farm is growing our future with trees to support and assist our environment. Frank and Carolyn Harris of Round Oak Resources Tree Farm and Murray & Company Realtors are proud supporters of the UGA Griffin campus and area youth activities in Griffin and Spalding County.
In announcements from the University of Georgia Griffin campus, Young Scholar applications will be taken online. You can visit www.ysp.caes.uga.edu for more information and an application. However, the deadline for those applications is today. The campus store, which is located on the first floor of the Flint Building at 1109 Experiment Street, has new UGA and Georgia Bulldog items arriving weekly. The shelves are stocked with officially licensed UGA apparel, souvenirs, and gifts. The campus store hours are Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. Information on current undergraduate and graduate degrees that are offered through the five university colleges on the UGA Griffin campus can be obtained by visiting griffin.uga.edu or by calling 770-412-4400. And finally, continuing education offers classes on the UGA campus throughout the year. For a complete listing, please visit the UGA Griffin campus website. Again, that address is www.griffin.uga.edu, or you can call 770-412-4400. We're approaching the end of this morning's University of Georgia Griffin campus news. To dot the I's and cross the T's, let's turn the proceedings back over to this morning's host, Dr. Lou Honeycutt.
Thank you, Tony. Welcome back, everybody. We've had a great time today. We still got some time left, but talking to George Grenade and Dale Hess, who, again, I lead the Unsung Heroes groups on campus, which are the field research services, the grounds, the farms, and then also the facilities, which is a giant component. But so, guys, we were talking before. We've talked about your teams. We've talked about the future. We talked about the past. Let's talk about sometimes people think, well, yeah, you've got these people and you talk about not having enough, but it's only 325 people that work there. Well, in our last full year, and we're about to get the numbers for this year, but so for 2017, the year, 35,000 people visited our campus. And that's a whole lot more than 325,
right.
Which means facilities and FRS are responsible for showing them a good time, cleaning up after them, doing all that, which is pretty incredible. And so, George, and certainly up from your end, we do outdoor activities as well as indoor, and some of them are some pretty big field day events.
Right.
So what are some of the things that we do with them?
Well, we work with the turf team. They do a biannual field day on the even years, and just had one this past August, so the next one will be in 2020.
About 800-ish.
They get about 800 to 1,000 folks out.
On the hottest day of the year in August.
Or the wettest.
Or the wettest, that's true.
But usually it's the hottest day, like you're saying. And then we also do the Agroforestry and Wildlife Field Day that we work with several other state agencies with and other colleges as well as within the university, the Varnell School of Forestry and Natural Resources. And so we get around 300 to 500 folks out for that to come out.
And it's
out
on the Westbrook Farm, and they get to experience
It's on
the
Westbrook Farm, and we have demonstration sites showing thinning or showing wildlife plots, food plots, and just a host of things to see. And it's an all-day affair as well. And then in the Research and Education Garden, as you know, they have different days that they do little events with several people coming out. Well, I say several, it would be 20 or 30 folks come out.
Sure.
Or even more, depending on what they're working on that day. So that's another one. We've also started working, Wade Hutchison, before he left as our county agent, with the school system and working with Farm Day with the school, with the elementary schools, in which we had 1,000 students.
Sure.
First graders come out to the Bledsoe Farm. That was quite an experience there to do that, but it was a two-day event and worked really well, and we look forward to working with the new agent as well on that. And then Pike County has contacted us. Their county agent, Brooklyn Westman, and she wants us to work with their Ag Day with their high school students, and that's coming up at the end of March. And they'll visit the Bledsoe Farm. Several of our researchers will talk to them about what they're doing out there. There'll be about 40 or 50 students that will come out for that.
Sure. So from young to old, I mean, we don't discriminate against for age. I mean, it's
exactly.
1,000 first graders in 2 days, right?
In 2 days.
That's pretty incredible. But and this is the event that in the past had been held at Kiwanis.
Had been held at the Kiwanis Fairgrounds.
And so this was our first year out at the Bledsoe. And we may end up changing the venue a little bit to make it more convenient
exactly.
for everybody. But it was a great – unfortunately, I was in Athens, and I didn't purposely do that. So I love kids, but I didn't get to attend. But I will hopefully be able to schedule around that and be available for that this last year. But so lots of people
come out. Exactly.
And I think that's the – when I came here, that's one of the things I wanted to do is show people that fact, because a lot of people thought we're just this secretive Area 52 kind of no one's supposed to be there kind of thing. Well, I'm telling you, 35,000 people coming through the campus, and our 18 numbers will be about that. I don't know yet. I've looked at the preliminary, but that's an incredible number of people, and it really goes to show how community-oriented the campus is too, because a whole lot of those events are overnight or 2 or 3 days,
exactly,
which means hotels and restaurants and caterers and all those kind of things. So the university, there's an estimate that to have us in this county is about a $15 million a year impact, which is incredible. And I think I would hope most people would agree it's a good thing to have us here. I mean, we plan to stay, so
exactly.
We've been here for a long time. So we've been here before that part of Griffin was even Griffin. So we were experiment for a long time. So,
and that doesn't even count the people that come to the main campus just to hold different events there that
sure.
they use the SLC or Stuckey Building for.
And absolutely.
There again, the grounds crew has got to make sure our campus is looking good all the time.
And they do. And facilities have to make sure the buildings are clean, and they are. I'm telling you, like I said, y'all make me look good. We get so many compliments mm-hmm. on our campus. And number one, what all's there. People that haven't been, even from Athens, that haven't been here in a long time, they're just blown away with what we have. I mean, we have all the research going on. We have the academic programs. We have the fourth largest seed bank on the planet on campus. We have an incredible many different components that make up what we are, and it's impressive. I mean, I know, a little biased, I know, but I don't bring anyone on that they're not impressed before they leave.
Right.
So I think that's a kudos to y'all, because again, what they're seeing, they don't go in all the buildings, they're seeing the grounds, they're seeing the restrooms, they're seeing the parts of the buildings they need to go into. And we don't ever get, well, I don't know if ever, but we rarely get big complaints. So let's applaud y'all for that. But so kind of to wrap up, we got a few minutes left, probably about 3 minutes left. What's something we've left out? What's something we haven't talked about? This is your soapbox time if you want to get something off your chest. Or
well, you asked what I saw for the future.
Sure.
And but I think we're going to have a team put together here in the near future that will develop a master plan for the campus.
Good point.
And
absolutely.
So we'll bring a lot of different people together to put together an idea, and it'll help guide us in the way we're going forward in the future on the campus. There's still a lot of buildings there that have got to be renovated.
Sure.
They are just aging facilities. The Stuckey Building is well over 50 years old now, and it's starting to show its age. It's it could use an interior upgrade. Sure.
And it's our largest meeting space and our largest community use space for large for groups. So you're right. I mean, that it's we have an aging facility. It's beautiful, but it's aging.
And there's more faculty coming on campus. We're growing. You bet. And we need more space for more labs. Even the teaching program could be improved with a laboratory.
Sure.
So we need a facility that will accomplish or accommodate a lab. So it's we really don't have a building there that really meets that need at the present time.
Sure.
So, it's something that's going to have to be constructed down the road.
And that's where it's a really good point about the master plan and strategic planning. The last time anything like that was done was around 2005. And that the lot has changed in the country and in Georgia since 2005. I mean, we all survived. Everyone survived the 2008 to 2009. But even then, there really wasn't a lot of plan that went along with it, more than just kind of a what do we want here. This time we want to do a what are we going to look like in 10 years, and how are we going to get there, so that when donors come about or when we're talking in Athens or anywhere else, it's here's the plan. Here's what we need to look forward to. And you can't do that without a plan. I mean, it's tough to run a business if you don't have a business plan. So, and, you know, who knows what it's going to be, but I'm really anxious to get that group together. We'll have community people involved, all of us, people from Athens. I mean, we want it to be a surefire, really good map for us to look at and going forward with buildings, with programs, with research, with all the different things that we do. Because, you know, we quite literally, if we had more facilities, we talk about this a lot with people in Griffin. If we had a large event center in Griffin somewhere, we could bring in the big things that we can't bring in now. Our continuing ed has to turn away several things a year at least that are larger than we can handle at our campus, because one that comes to mind is the beekeepers group. They have grown so much. They come in once a year, and we have them in four or five buildings mm-hmm. now, and they finally told us we're going to have to go somewhere else. We can't. They're grateful that we're there, but we don't have a place big enough. They've gotten that big. I would love to be able to change that at mm-hmm. some point and bring in the big things that help Griffin, Spalding County, and, of course, help us. But, well, guys, thank you all so much. Again, the unsung heroes, George Grenade and Dale Hess, who run – I'm not even going to divide it out. Y'all just run everything. I mean, if you come on campus and you think it looks beautiful, if you go in a building and it looks clean, tell somebody. If you see somebody walking around, just make sure you comment to them. And certainly if you comment to me, I will spread it back to the people that make it happen, because I'm lazy. I don't do any of the cleaning or the mowing or anything else, but I will certainly get the credit where credit is due.